Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
And if anyone has more confidence in elections in Russia and Middle Eastern countries not named Israel, that is a joke. That is a joke.
You know what? Then our election
Let's
in America is a joke, and Maricopa is a joke.
Go ahead with Russia. Have fun voting in Russia. See how that goes.
We have an agreement with the president that our nominees will get a fair consideration, and I'm glad they're finally at the table on this.
If the court were to take this off of the ballot at this point, that would be a real injustice to the hundreds of thousands of Arizona voters who said they want to be able to, you know, make their choice in November.
It'll go to two things. One, Title I funds for the schools that have the most students in poverty, and also money that we can use for school improvement for schools that have low proficiency rates to train teachers, train leadership, and so on.
And with me to talk about a win and a loss for supporters of the abortion rights ballot measure, a deal between Governor Hobbs and state Senate Republicans and more, are Chuck Coughlin of High Ground. Good morning, Chuck.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks, Mark.
And a Democratic strategist, Tony Connie. Tony, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Chuck, this week with the abortion rights initiative, as I mentioned, a win and a loss, they were certified as having enough signatures. However, the state Supreme Court overruled a lower court judge and said that the phrase unborn human being would be allowed to be in the publicity pamphlet that will be sent to all voters across the state. So, on balance, good week, bad week? What do you think?
It's on the ballot. I mean, it's a victory. We're discussing the publicity pamphlet, which is mailed out by the Secretary of State to all the voters in Arizona. And you have arguments in there. And it is a good resource. But they're objecting to some phrases in there which do exist in statute, and so it was an outrageous ruling by the court. It found a rational basis for maintaining Ledge Counsel's description, but I can understand why they. But, you know, all in all, hey man, we're all going to get to vote on it, which is the most important thing.
Yeah, Tony, do you agree with that?
I half agree with that. I mean, this more signatures than have ever been submitted ever for this initiative because it's got broad support. But it's very clear that when they wrote this description out of the legislature, the reason they did it was to try and unfairly influence people. Yeah. The first court said, hey, look, this is obviously a political term. And then the Supreme Court, big surprise, if there's any doubt about how politicized this court has been since Ducey packed it, they decided that, no, we should let this phrase be on the pamphlet. I don't think that it's going to make a huge impact for voters. And I think part of it is because over the past couple of years, voters have seen that the people that argue against abortion rights, they've lost all credibility. They've lost so much credibility. They said all the things they said that will not happen if Roe went away has happened. Women's lives have been in danger. People are talking about not allowing folks to go over state lines to get abortions, like all of these things that they said that wouldn't happen is happening. And so when it comes down to it, that's a tough position, a tough situation for the people that want this to fail that they're in, because I just think that voters want to preserve these rights, take it out of the legislature, put it in the Constitution.
Well, so Chuck, you said it's on the ballot, and it is for now. There is still a lawsuit from Arizona Right to Life that's challenging having this on the ballot. Given what Tony said about the state Supreme Court, which is the same court that ruled that the 1864 abortion law should take effect, do you think there's a chance the court could kick this off the ballot?
I don't. I don't see a rational basis for them to get there. I have my own litigation in front of the court right now on our Make Elections Fair initiative,
yeah,
which is also a ballot analysis mm-hmm. case. And so we'll find out. But I think we're going to get the I can't see a rationale in which they would remove, as Tony just so eloquently said, hundreds of thousands of people who have signed petitions to express their desire to have a vote on this.
So, Tony, speaking of ballot measures, the state Supreme Court this week also said that the border security measure referred by the state legislature, by the legislative Republicans specifically, would be allowed to stay on the ballot. This was another single subject rule challenge. we've been talking about whether, you know, abortion, the abortion rights measure is sort of seen as a big driver for Democratic turnout, maybe the border security measure is seen as a big turnout driver for Republican support. Given that, at least right now, they're both going to be on the ballot, how do you see, like, how do you see the turnout models based on both of those?
I think the immigration one is probably more of a messaging opportunity for the Republicans than it is a turnout push. I think obviously something that that a lot of the voters are focused on. But when you look at the numbers, the types of voters that are animated the most by by that initiative, a higher percentage of them are regular voters. On the other hand, the types of voters who are motivated by the abortion initiative tend to be younger, tend to be women, tend to be voters that in the past have needed more of a reason to show up to the polls. And so I think that on balance, if you're looking at the two, that the abortion initiative is probably going to drive turnout more. But being such a huge battleground state in such a important, every level of the election is being contested right now. Like,
yeah,
from legislature to presidential, I think turnout's going to be so high anyway that I don't know how much of a difference it would make. But when you, as a Democrat, like Biden won by 10,000 votes, I'll take a little bit more.
The margins matter, right?
Because these tiny margins do matter, yeah.
So, Chuck, I want to ask you, because we've seen a few of these single subject rule challenges, including one on your Make Elections Fair.
Yes.
and the courts have basically ruled against those challenges in all cases. So, like, what does that tell you about what initiative supporters can do or what the legislature can do in terms of putting a bunch of things into an initiative or a law maybe,
yeah,
and not having it run afoul of the single subject rule?
As long as they're interrelated, as long as they're related to a single topic, I mean, that's generally the rule. That's the precedential nature of what the court looks at. And as long as you can tie it to one single purpose, in our Make Elections Fair case, it's treating every voter the same. It's treating every candidate the same, and it's elections.
Right. They're all candidate elections,
the judge
said.
All related to the same topic. That follows the precedents that come before. I think people get confused about, you can't have multiple amendments to the Constitution. If they're related, you're going to pass muster, and I suspect we'll pass muster later this week. We've already won at the trial court level with Make Elections Fair. We had an amicus brief filed yesterday by former Governor Symington and former Speaker of the House Rusty Bowers in favor of Make Elections Fair on the same topic, mentioning their legislative histories, things that they have done that are very complicated. And the narrative there is, you know, we live in very modern times. There's very complicated issues that are here. And as long as they're interrelated and form a narrative of their own, you'll pass the test.
So one other election thing I want to get to before the break, and I want to start, Tony, with you. We saw in CD1, the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, listed former State Representative Amish Shah in their red to blue program, which basically suggests that this is a race in which the National Democrats will be spending money. CD1 has been seen as a potential pickup opportunity for Democrats going up against a longtime incumbent, David Schweikert. Does the move, like the formalization of him in this program, does that matter at all, or is it just sort of saying out loud what a lot of people had already thought?
I think it matters because it shows that it's a priority. And so it's a signal to other donors, to other organizations, hey, this is a race that you should invest in. We've done the research. This is a place where you're going to be able to pick up seats. And so, yeah, I do think it matters. It's going to be a tough race either way. I think that with the additional enthusiasm that Democrats have right now since Harris became the nominee, I think Schweikert's in a tougher position than he was in a month ago. It's going to be a really important race.
Well, and, you know, the sort of the conventional wisdom is having a primary can be sort of a good practice, right, for going in the general election. This was, I think, a six-way primary,
yeah,
which with a lot of sort of well-known candidates in it. Does that help Shah now going against a very tough campaigner and a good fundraiser in David Schweikert?
Yeah, I think it does, just because, you know, he had only run at the legislative level before. He did very well, and now he came out ahead in that race. He's been talking to voters at the doors during the primary, so he's got a good sense of what voters care about. And then now his campaign team is going to have to do a much bigger sort of media-based more, you know, modern campaign in addition to his door knocking in order to win. And I think he's going to be positioned to do that. And also because he's going to be raising a ton of money with the enthusiasm from him winning.
So, Chuck, if you're the Schweiker campaign, is Shaw the candidate that you wanted to face, the candidate you didn't want to face?
I think it's better than facing a woman. And I think they were more fearful of that in the cycle because it creates more contrast. Dr. Shaw, as Tony just said, is known as a door knocker. He just got out of a very competitive race where he won, I think, with less than 25% of the vote. So you have a divided, you know, potentially divided Democratic field. But it's going to be difficult for Schweiker to penetrate that audience. As Tony said, the district is going to evolve blue over the coming years. Mm-hmm. It's moving in that direction like Sinema's old district did, and now Congressman Stanton's district. It's part of that purple area that runs down the middle of the 101 and Maricopa County that is shifting. And they drew the lines farther into Phoenix. And so he's picked up more Phoenix voters. And it's more of a Maricopa County district now. And so it's going to be harder and harder for him to compete in that district.
So, Chuck, I guess maybe this says something about the state of politics when a former Republican governor of the state, it's news that such a person endorses the Republican nominees for president and U.S. Senate in his state. But such is the way in the place we're in now. Former Governor Doug Ducey announced this week that he was endorsing former President Trump and U.S. Senate candidate Carrie Lake. And this somehow is noteworthy.
It's noteworthy because, you know, the former president threw the governor under the bus during the contested election, called him all kinds of names. And he also endorsed Carrie Lake, who threw him under the bus, called him all kinds of names. You know, I saw that and I chuckled because Doug has a role with the Common Sense Institute now in his post-gubernatorial career. And I'm like, that probably doesn't make a lot of common sense to most people out there. But, you know, as a political creature, I'm reminded consistently that the way we vote today, politics is a team sport. You're either on the team or you're not on the team. And so, you know, what choice does he have in if he wants to play a role in a role? I would have ducked. I would be like, nah, not my cup of tea. I'm not going to do this.
Which is kind of what he did 2 years ago, yeah. Right? Like he endorsed Karen Taylor Robeson in the GOP gubernatorial primary and didn't really say much when Carrie Lake won that. Like,
right.
Maybe he voted for Lake. We don't know.
Yeah.
But it's not our business. But
well,
he didn't say, I'm okay, she's the nominee of my party. I'm endorsing her.
And the same with Karen. When Karen lost, she never endorsed Lake mm-hmm. after that for all the things that Lake had said.
She has since.
Now she's come around on that. And, you know, I think it's hard for a lot of people to see that and have respect for that type of maneuver outside of the confines of the very narrow Republican primary voter. And you're just not going to get any love from those people. They're just not going to come back around. It's not like, oh, Doug's a really good guy. I'm gonna go support him again. Or Karen's my cup of tea. It doesn't fit. And so, you know, I've been around this business for a long time, Mark. You know, my God, I'll admit to my sins of I ran Russell Pierce's campaigns at a point in time because he was a valuable member of the Republican Party at a point in time and helping Governor Symington win a very tight election in 1994. And he was a good guy. And I always maintained a relationship with him throughout his life and towards the end of his life, even. We didn't agree on everything, but, you know, we talked. But I don't even get that kind of sense here that there's a dialogue between the Trump folks and the Ducey folks or the Lake folks and the Ducey folks or conversely the Taylor Robeson folks.
Yeah.
It's a different world we live in today.
Tony, was it surprising to you to see that Governor Ducey endorsed Trump and Lake?
It wasn't. I was upset that he did. But it wasn't surprising. I mean, don't forget that he is the person who raised over $500,000 to get Senator Wendy Rogers elected to the legislature. And now we've seen what that's done. And so, you know, I do think that one of Doug Ducey's greatest sort of legacies isn't going to be the legislation as he passed. It's going to be the silence as these far-right wing people took over the Republican Party. Chuck said it's a team sport, and I think Chuck is right, but the teams are democracy versus not democracy. The teams are sanity versus chaos. And, you know, and Ducey said, you know, well, we're going to get past squabbles. It's not a squabble to try and overthrow the results of an election. That's not a issue difference. That's not – and so I do think that he's thinking about his political future maybe, or perhaps donors of the organization that he runs care about this. But I do think that in the end, voters are going to look at this and they're going to think, oh, this guy, he just doesn't have any values. He doesn't have a backbone. And I think that's part of the reason why he went from being one of the most popular governors in America – to one of the least popular when he left office.
And it's not – Tony's right. The teams have changed. The jersey color has changed from GOP and the friendly little elephant to MAGA. The Republican Party today is a MAGA party. It's not your father's GOP. It's not your father's Buick anymore. It's a very different place.
And you saw a bunch of the sort of MAGA influencers and elected officials taking a victory lap when Ducey made this announcement saying, hey, look, we beat the McCain wing of the party. They're now coming to us. And I think that that's not what people want to see. It's very frustrating.
And it's the reason the fastest growing part of the electorate are unaffiliated voters.
Right.
It is the fastest growing part of the electorate.
Yeah.
Previously, because of the identity politics that the left was espousing, you know, that identity through your, you know, gender, you know, not value-based stuff. And now it's the Republican Party doing the same thing. It's identity politics of the Republicans.
Mm-hmm. One last thing
and
I'd say about
this. People flee from that. They don't want to be a
part
of that.
One thing I'm interested is, like, it's no secret that Ducey and Robeson were going around saying all kinds of bad things about these two people last year. And so the people who they've talked to that are in their circles that see this endorsement, I wonder if it's a signal to them that they need to pony up and get on board, or whether or not people are like, oh, well, I guess they're just not who they said they were.
All right, guys, just a few minutes left. I want to ask you about a deal this week reached between Governor Katie Hobbs and the Senate, state Senate Republicans, over her nominees to lead state agencies. The governor is saying, okay, the president has said, you know, he will treat my nominees with more respect. They'll have hearings and get votes. And the Senate president says, sure, if she sends us better nominees. The governor says, I'm probably going to send you the same nominees I did before. Chuck, are we just back at square one here?
No, because we have an election. She is very aware.
So is she hedging then?
Oh, yeah. I think that she'll play along regardless, but I think she's very much hopeful that Warren Peterson will not be the president of the Senate. There will no longer be Jake Hoffman's committee. It will go back to the way it was, where appointees go. The transportation director goes to the transportation committee. The health committee chair, the access director goes to the health, you know, the DOA director goes to government committee. That's what we'll go back to under a change of leadership in the Senate. And, you know, odds of that happening are pretty good, that, you know, I could at least see a 15-15 tie. That's a very realistic scenario. And I think she's saying, OK, I'll play along until November and we'll see how these cards shake out.
Tony, is there a risk, though, that if Republicans are still in control of state government come January, that there is still a committee led by Senator Jake Hoffman, who is still going to do the same kind of hearings to her nominees that they did last year?
Yeah, and we're under the assumption he's not going to prison for being a fake elector, I think, in this scenario. But
assume he's still in the legislature.
There's a risk. But one thing that the governor did both in her campaign and since is she knows that these are not good faith negotiators, that these people are not thinking about what's good for the state. You have Governor Brewer, as conservative as they come, who is somebody who cares about the powers of the governor, but she also really knows the legislature from her time there. And I've heard her come out and say, boy, what they're doing with these nominees doesn't make any sense. It's bad for government. I think that that's the position of most people, unless you're in that 20% that just thinks that you need to stop government working no matter what in order to make Donald Trump people happy.
So, Chuck, before we go, let's put the cart several miles before the horse, all right? Let's say that there's a 15-15 split. Obviously, that would require some kind of power-sharing agreement. We've seen it before in the state Senate. Does this become one of the issues that Democrats and Republicans have to negotiate over?
Yeah, it will be. It will be that issue. And you will see those aforementioned MAGA candidates, Peterson and others, won't be in leadership. You'd see David Gowen, in a power sharing agreement with Fernandez. And under that circumstances, I say this committee goes away. Jake Hoffman, regardless if Tony's right, he's in prison. He's not going to be the chairman of a committee. He will not be the chairman of that committee for sure. And they resolve it that way.
All right. We'll have to leave it there. Chuck Coughlin, Tony Connie, thanks to you both for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thanks, Mark.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.